It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are in Redmond. They've just come out of briefings on the latest from Microsoft, Windows 10, the new browser, the HoloLens. They've even tried it. We'll find out what they think next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 397, recorded January 21st, 2015, The Perfect 10. Windows Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/windows. That's ZipRecruiter.com/windows. And by HipChat Plus. Collaborate, save time, and be more productive with your teams. HipChat Plus is IM, video chat, plus file, code, and screen sharing all in one place. Invite your team members and get a free 30-day trial of HipChat Plus at HipChat.com/Windows Weekly. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers the latest news from Microsoft. And today is perhaps, I'm going to venture out on a limb here, the biggest day for Microsoft since Windows XP, maybe.
Wow.
Whoa. I'm going to give it some credit. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley is here. They're in Redmond, where they just finished getting briefed on the announcements from Microsoft. It began this morning at 9 o'clock in a super secret location.
Leah, we've seen things we can never forget. You know?
It wasn't a very big room. It looked like there were maybe 50 people in there, and you were sitting on comfy chairs and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this was throwing paper balls at Alex from the back row, and it was nice.
It was like this is the creme de la creme of Windows journalists. a shrinking cadre, too. I might add a cohort of fewer and fewer each year. But,
sure,
boy,
sure.
I had to say, and it's, I didn't come in for the announcement. We did cover it live with Mike Elgin and Megan Maroney, and I thought, well, I could skip this one because I'm going to be here with Paul and Mary Jo. I regret that because I feel like this was a massive announcement.
Yeah, I think it really was a big deal.
You don't disagree?
No, there were tons of parts. We were just sitting there trying to write everything up, and it was like, wow, there's so much. Yeah. Like, where do you even dig in here, you know?
The point being, we are never happy. So in October, there was not enough, and there was lots of complaining. And then this time, there was too much, and there's lots of complaining. we're like children.
There was good ice cream, though.
They gave you ice cream?
Yeah, we get ice cream.
So the very first thing they say that I think is significant is Terry Myerson starts. He's the SVP for operating systems at Microsoft, right? Mm-hmm. And he comes out and he says, we're going to give it away.
Well, with a little asterisk.
Yeah, now, so that's the first thing I'm thinking is, well, I got to know what this means from Paul and Mary Jo. So they said, for users of Windows 7 and 8.1, Microsoft Windows 10, the next version of Windows, will be free for the first year. What the hell does that mean?
And also for Windows Phone 8.
Oh, and that was big too,
Windows
right?
Windows Phone 8.1.
He held up a 1520. It warmed the cockles of my little heart here because this is the phone I use that I feel like it's an orphan that nobody does, you know.
Hey, listen, there's been a lot of 1520 today.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about Daniel Rubino's incredible green 1520. I mean, these things were like everywhere.
That's good news. I love this phone. I mean, this is, of all the phones they made, this is, I think, the best example of Windows Phone.
So with regards to this pricing thing, do you want to take a stab at this? This is a little complex.
We'll both take a stab at it.
Do they fill you in? Do they give you more detail?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what they're going to do, this is for consumers, we should say first, not for business customers. If you're on the latest versions of Windows 7, Windows 8.1, or Windows Phone 8.1, once Windows 10 becomes commercially available, which we think is going to be this fall, 2015, you'll have 1 year to decide to upgrade for free.
Okay.
And if you do that, it means that you're going to allow Microsoft to update your software going forward on a regular basis. And we don't know how what that exactly means, how quickly or what.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
They're going to do that for free too. So we've seen some people erroneously saying this is the equivalent of Office 365, but it is not. Even though they said today Windows is now considered a service.
Well, hold on a second. Actually, I would say from an updating process, it is like Office 365. From a licensing perspective, it's not because you don't keep paying for it.
Well, I'll give you – okay, I'm going to be the normal human because I'm sitting here watching. I'm thinking, okay, they say for 1 year. Does that mean that after a year I have to pay an update yearly subscription fee?
No. That's an amazing question.
It does not mean that.
You're right.
That's the first thing that leaps to mind. Because you know what? I don't trust companies. Free, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, free for a year. So that means I have a year to upgrade.
It's not, right? That's, you know, it's interesting. It's not free for a year. It is, you can upgrade to this version for free for the first year.
Within a year's period.
But you've upgraded. It's not an ongoing subscription payment thing.
So once I upgrade to Windows 10, I will have the latest version of Windows 10 on my system at all times at no cost forever.
That's correct. Well, for the lifetime of the device.
For the lifetime of the device or the lifetime that Microsoft says is the period that they support Windows 10.
So that's the – okay, that makes sense. So I don't know what the lifetime of the device means. Is there a net – I know that there's a lifetime for Windows 10, as there was for 7 and 8.
Right.
That they go out of – you know, they go out of
service. Honestly, it's nothing we have to parse too much because people who are going to upgrade their computers, meaning buy another computer – are going to get Windows 10 at that point, right? So it's not we don't really.
You know
why
I'm interested? Because I just bought that Dell new XPS 13.
Yep.
And I knew when I was buying it. Well, I might be buying it with the old OS, and then in 8 months got a I don't know what.
Yeah.
And so this is great news. This means I have a Windows 10 machine.
Yep.
Yes.
For free.
Mm-hmm. Even more importantly, I can't underscore how important this is. If you have Windows Phone 8 or 8.1, you have a Windows 10 phone.
Yep. So let's you highlighted what I guess is the most important question and the most obvious question. Let's throw out two more questions that weren't answered per se. Well, actually, one of them was. Windows RT.
Okay.
What about the Windows RT devices? And I actually asked during the Q&A what the plan was. And what they said was that they don't have specifics right now, but they do plan to upgrade existing Windows RT devices to Windows 10.
Whoa. No, they didn't say that.
I thought he very specifically said that.
Now, you are across the table from one another, so if you want to leap across the table and grab Paul by the throat, you have my permission.
I think what he said was, I think what he said was, we are going to upgrade Windows RT devices, ARM-based Windows RT devices, but he didn't say to Windows 10. He just said we're going to have an update to those devices. So we don't actually know what that means. Does it mean Windows 10?
You're really parsing that sentence. Okay.
Well, she's covered Microsoft for a while, Paul. I think she...
Yeah. I thought the wording was very curious. Like, I think if it was, we are going to upgrade you to Windows 10, he would have said that. But what he said was, we are going to update Windows RT-based devices. And we have a plan, but we don't have the details yet or know exactly how that's going to work, but we're going to update them. So he didn't actually say to 10.
Think of what it would mean. It would mean not Windows. Now, I know this distinction is starting to go away.
They should call it Windows 9, Leo.
but the distinction between desktop Windows and Intel Windows and ARM Windows goes away a little bit. But for RT devices or ARM devices, it would sound like Windows it's really going to be the Windows Phone version of Windows 10 that they would upgrade.
I would think so. I would be shocked if that isn't what they meant. But
there's really going to be two windows. There's an ARM Window 10 and an Intel Window 10. I know there's a unified app, and we'll get to that. But it sounds like if you're going to upgrade RT, you'd have to upgrade it to Windows Phone 10.
Yeah, except that technically speaking, that OS, which we'll just think of as Windows Mobile, I believe is for devices that are under eight inch screen size. So,
You know,
I guess
what?
We'll see. That's interesting. Okay.
This is a small group of people, not that many people on RT devices. Just you, me, and Mary.
Well, but it's very important to those people. I can tell you that early adopters. You know, they're going to want to be part of that.
Okay. Yeah.
So the other one is Windows Phone. And you'll recall from right up front, we were talking about how if you have Windows Phone 8.1 on your device, you'll get a free upgrade to Windows 10, which is interesting because not unique to Microsoft, but Microsoft has trouble shipping updates today. on Windows Phone.
And I'm still not on Denim on my 1520. Yeah.
So the story there is we need to wait until build, I think, in April to hear more about this. They have a plan. They're not talking about it today. So that's not a big part of the story today. But it's something to think about. So they have said that they will make it available. They haven't said how. So I guess we'll see.
Yep.
Okay.
And so they did say today that I guess I'm kind of jumping ahead here. So I won't say that yet. Sorry.
All right. You know what? I thought we would do, and I think you agreed, the structure of this should be maybe to use the keynote as the backbone of what we do. So Terry Myerson came out. He gave a lot of facts and figures, 1.5 billion users and, you know, what is blah, blah, blah. Yeah. The traditional keynote, you know, kind of warm them up thing where how great we're doing, how great you're doing.
Because you're a great crowd.
We love you. And then Joe comes out, Joe Belfiore. Comes out
with a haircut, by the way. He got his haircut.
It still
very
looks
sensitive about the hair.
Yeah, it still looks kind of long, but he looks good. I like Joe.
Joe's great.
I don't know anyone that doesn't like Joe.
Yeah. Nice guy. Great. I tell you what, he's a great demonstrator. I mean, he really is a good speaker at these events.
Yeah, and he's very enthusiastic.
And he's going to show the user interface. So, by the way, he starts out on desktop, and lo and behold, a start menu pops up.
Yeah, and by the way, if you pause it there for a second, just to sort of focus on that start screen and just the desktop in general, you know, this UI has evolved since the version we had in the technical preview from last year.
Ah, interesting.
Right. So start menu has kind of a new look and feel to it. I didn't go and really look at the machines too much. I looked a little bit at Windows 10. I looked at the, you know, that continuum mode and so forth. But if you notice in some of the screens, like there is kind of a lighter thing going on, and then there's also kind of a darker thing going on. I know we talked about dark and light themes, and I think that might be part of it.
Yeah.
But that has there's a button up there in the corner that you can stretch the start screen full screen if you want to.
Ah.
And when that thing is full screen, it looks and works like
then,
the start screen.
So then you have the option, but it looks like the default is not to be full screen.
Right, not on the desktop computer.
And is it so we see tiles. Mm-hmm. But it also is kind of a menu thing too, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's evolved from the version we had before, but it's very familiar.
Yeah.
The on-off switch is now here instead of hidden in the charms bar. Actually, though, that on the tiled menu, that's up at the top of the screen now on Windows 8.1. I'm just looking. It's very familiar looking. Anybody use Windows 7?
Mm-hmm.
You've got icons, you know, in the task menu. You've got a little task bar in the lower right. You've got Joe and his family from Guatemala on the beach. Even a recycle bin in the upper right hand corner. I mean, this is Windows like we used, like Windows 7 Windows.
Yep. This is Windows for Windows 7 users, not to scare them away.
Yeah. And is this default? It kind of is how it's going to start, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they did say this. So right now you're looking at the desktop version of Windows 10. And we did learn today that next week there's going to be the next technical preview build release for people who have Windows 10 preview now. So those people are going to get a refresh next week. We don't know which day, but sometime next week.
Right. Wow. So the technical preview people will be completely up to, what is it, $94.99 or whatever the build is that they're...
It was I saw it and I forgot it. It was $99.27 or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is interesting. We'll I guess when he goes full screen, I'll stop it on this. No more charms bar, but there is something on the right. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Right. So what you see there, it's kind of hard in that long shot, but it's the notification center called. Well, it's called Action Center. Same as on Windows Phone. So you get all the app-specific and system-specific notifications brought out. You can deal with them one at a time or whatever. On the bottom, there is those quick action boxes. Again, same as on Windows Phone. Just, you know, quick things you might want to get to very quickly. If you swipe in on a touch screen, you'll get to this. If there's a little icon down there if you're on a, you know, keyboard or mouse system as well.
I like this. And, you know, what's interesting is that's what a Mac does. That's the notice. Yeah, it's exactly what a Mac does. But I do like the addition of these quick action. Can you customize these quick action buttons?
Yep. Just like Windows Phone.
I really like this. I have to say, this is much better than a charm bar.
Yes.
I don't think anyone is shedding a tear for charms.
Nope. Mm-mm.
I think I know one person.
Okay. No. Charms was one of the, you know, there were like five things that were horrible in Windows 8, and that was one of them.
Yeah, it might have been number one. Yeah,
it might have been number one. So, and this, and but more than that, more than taking away Charms, this looks actually really great and useful.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, nice shot right there. You can see the at the bottom. See how many tiles there are down there. He's kind of expanded the quick actions area, and so you can see.
Oh, I
more
see collapse, stuff. And you have a collapse button. And there's
nine.
Yeah,
you don't do that in
right
Windows
now.
Phone today, but I think maybe in Windows 10 that will be there as well.
You know, I didn't know this feature is in Windows Phone. Is this the notification? Where is this? In Windows?
Yeah, it's you just drag down from the top of the screen.
Right. Okay.
So on a 1520, see five of them.
And there are these tiles, but they're at the top on a Windows Phone. They're up here on the top, yeah. And this, so okay, yeah. That's actually a great feature.
Yeah.
But it's very phone-like, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. In fact, it's really the same thing, essentially, at this point.
Well, and so this is really the conundrum Microsoft faced when they went from 7 to 8. How do we make a OS that works on a mobile, on tablet, and on desktop? And the first iteration wasn't great, but this looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, and so obviously there are these concessions to these traditional form factors, and the Metro stuff isn't as big and kind of cartoony or Fisher-Pricey as it used to be, and I think that's a concession for people who are on desktop or traditional computers.
He's detached his Surface from the keyboard, and so he's showing...
So pause right there for a second, just so we can kind of talk about that. So do you want to talk about the Continuum?
So in the September event, they promised that we were going to have this thing called Continuum, which was going to be a way that the operating system recognized whether you had a keyboard attached and when you didn't. So if you didn't, the appropriate UI would show up. And when you did, a different UI would show up. But it would be very seamless instead of having this thing like, do I have the keyboard attached? And now I'm doing things in a different way. And why doesn't the system automatically recognize that? So they showed us Continuum today. I think they said... They didn't say it would be in the next technical preview.
It will. So here's how my understanding is it will be there. It will only be available for Surfaces.
Yeah.
That was how I took it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Interesting. And I heard it was in that demo room. Somebody told me that, PC makers would need to actually explicitly support this or something.
Oh, right.
So that's right. if you don't have a supported detachable, you can trigger this manually. There's a... it's tablet mode. I think it's a quick action.
Right.
Well, it looked like when he detached it, there was a pop-up. He actively had to say,
"That's right.
Yes,
that is
go
right.
into tablet mode now."
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, and vice versa when he reattached.
Well, you don't want to have it context shifting
that's
all
weird.
The time.
Yeah. No, I agree. This is very nicely done, I think.
Yep. Oh, we forgot to talk about settings, too. They showed us the new settings menu, right, in this.
Yeah.
And it looks so much better. It looks organized.
Oh, and by the way, I love Windows Phone, but if there's a tragedy on the Windows Phone UI, it's settings, which is in no order of any kind whatsoever and cannot be modified or changed in any way. And so this new settings interface is also being applied over the phone. So in other words, if you're familiar with Android or anything else, obviously these things are segregated into logical groups, wireless and networking or whatever and things like that. And that is how settings will be on Windows Phone. It's Windows 10. So Windows 10 on phones or Windows 10 on tablets or computers.
This is so great. Now, I was watching. He briefly held up this device, and I was trying to figure out what it was.
So
it looks
probably
than a Surface Pro.
Yeah, it's an 8-inch tablet. Okay. It's probably like a Dell Venue 8 Pro, something like that.
Okay. Not a Microsoft product.
No.
That's correct. Yeah. So, but the point here is a little subtle because 8 inches is this dividing line between whether you get the full blown experience or the phone and small tablet experience.
Right.
And so, if you're on a device that has a screen that's smaller than 8 inches, so not this device, but anything smaller, the UI will look more like Windows Phone, which they'll get to. But for 8 inches and up, you get Continuum, right? If you just bought this thing as a tablet, what you would get is something much like Windows 8 when it's today.
It'd be this look, which is a tablet, very tablety thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's showing how we snap and swipe things away, and all of that's the same.
Basically.
All right. Shortly after this, he's going to start talking with a young lady named Cortana.
we could skip through that a little bit. That was a bit long.
A lot of Cortana.
Yeah.
It's not particularly new stuff, or is it, with Cortana?
Well, I think the new bit is that thanks to Windows 10, Cortana comes to tablets.
Well, that's huge, PCs. Actually. Yeah, you're going to have it.
And I guess it comes to Xbox One, although they never explicitly said that.
Well, that is something we should mention. Windows 10 is everywhere, including Xbox.
That's right, yeah.
It will be. It's not yet.
This is, you know, remember when we talked about Satya Nadella, what looked like a gaffe, one Windows.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's not just the kernel. I mean, he really wants there to be one Windows across all these different UIs. Yeah.
And the magic kind of unknown bit here is, and of course this wasn't a developer event. There was no developer info, as you would expect, but how easy will it be for someone to start up a project in Visual Studio and write a universal app where you have a version that goes out to a phone, small tablets, big tablets, PCs, Xbox One?
Well, even this notion of a universal app is new, isn't it?
Well, it's really evolving,
I guess. But it's fair to say with this version, for the first time, Windows developers can target the screen in your living room, right? And so I think, I don't remember who said this, but someone said that they didn't expect to see Excel running on an Xbox One.
Or PowerPoint. Oh. They used PowerPoint on a phone as an example.
But actually, PowerPoint would be a good example. I mean,
This is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I feel like this is and key to developers. I mean, let's face it. Windows developers are going to still develop for the desktop. But they weren't developing for the mobile devices. They weren't doing phone.
But this gives them a much bigger area to target, right? In other words, before you'd say, well, Windows Phone and Windows were actually different APIs. And so what's the, you know.
Too much work.
They bring those things closer together. And then they add in, they have kind of a more seamless experience across a much wider range of devices, including Xbox One.
Yeah.
I do feel like this will help Windows Phone. That this announcement, in many ways, is the best news you could possibly have for Windows Phone and for Xbox in a way, because it means Nadella, who was rumored to be planning to sell off the Xbox division, clearly isn't. In fact, it's part of his devices and services strategy. And Windows Phone, this is a big, big story for Windows Phone. They're not dumping Windows Phone.
No, they're definitely not dumping Windows Phone. Yeah, I mean, that was a big part of this keynote, which is...
Yeah.
Hey, we've got a version of Windows that's going to run on Windows Phone. Windows 10.
And if you can get developers, I mean, I don't know what a universal app means. If you write an app for the desktop, I don't know what it means to put it on the phone. Not all apps size well to the phone, but.
Right. I mean, the things that are common is the kernel is common now. The runtime is common across the different platforms, and many of the APIs are common. So the thinking with the universal app is you as a developer take your core code, and you only have to modify the part that adjusts the UI piece.
Yeah, I don't think developers are used to that. They know that.
Right.
Yeah. They do it on iPad versus iPhone already. Right. I mean, the piece that's being added, a couple of pieces are, obviously on this system, desktop compatibility means mouse and keyboard and pen. And then on a game system, it means controller.
Yeah.
The other thing was a little weird with Cortana was there was... And they've been doing this. There's a canned, recorded human voice
that
sounds great. Yeah. And then that's where all the snark comes from. Joe, you saw. And then if it's like, how much did it cost to go? Does it cost to go to the University of Washington? It's back to a robotic voice. Not super robotic, but it's clearly different.
The voice. It's not the voice quality. It's just the unnatural. It's sort of like talking to this inanimate object as if it were a person,
They're the only ones who do that. I mean, neither Google nor Apple does that.
Nor do users,
And users don't talk in human voices and mechanical voices, Here's a little...
You could probably go without one. The forecast for tomorrow shows rain...
You hear it, right there.
...and a low of 48.
Exactly. And
so she starts out in a nice, normal voice and then starts to sound like a robot.
Sure.
I don't know. That's just maybe
it's
that's
like
just
when
me.
Skype breaks down,
Yeah, maybe it's just me. I think
it's going to take them time to record all these different pieces.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Some of the answers they haven't recorded in the voice, probably.
Well, some they'll never be able to record because they're actual answers. How much does the University of Washington cost?
Yeah. I'll tell you the thing on the Cortana demo that I love the most.
Yeah.
was, sorry. You know, we're used to Cortana giving you answers like who won the game, you know, what's right, the weather today. Right. But then they showed this thing where somebody could say on the PC, hey, Cortana, could you get me the PowerPoint presentation right, that I need for right, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, finally. Okay. It's not just a party trick. It's like something you right, might actually something really useful, use on your PC.
Yeah.
And it, that means Cortana can search your OneDrive, right?
That's
and
they critical. Can, Cortana searches everywhere. Stuff. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so it was that, hard was, drive, OneDrive, and OneDrive for Business, I think.
Yep.
Plus, of course,
yep,
the web, yeah.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Well, I mean, as far as searching for files.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that was, no, that to me was like, okay, because I was like, I don't really want Cortana
yes,
on my
exactly,
PC.
Exactly. She knows what I've let her know about me.
This was and kind of critical, this notion of privacy and trust.
See what Cortana right,
early on, they dug a little dig at Google saying, you're not the product at Microsoft.
Yep.
And
yep,
so this is going
to
be...
That's an important distinction to make.
Yeah, and I think yep, one of smart, the advantages, we've talked about this before, Apple cannot do this because they don't own all your interactions. Google can because they've got all this information. Microsoft will have all this information. And so what you're going to do is compare this Microsoft versus Google. Who do I trust with this information? And Microsoft right, makes a very strong case. Trust us.
Yep.
I think that's good. It gives consumers a choice. Apple does the same thing. They say, trust us, but they don't know as much. Microsoft, because this explains the hundreds of millions of dollars pumped into the black hole that is Bing. Right? This is the payoff.
Sure.
And so on and so on and so on.
All right. You said no more Cortana.
Yeah, the Cortana stuff's a little much.
It goes
on and on and on and on and on. Let's move to...
I get it. They're very taken with Cortana.
Yeah.
Well...
I get it. No, I mean, I get it.
You know what I would say? There was certainly a big portion of what they announced today was about new user interfaces, right?
Yep.
New ways to interact. And so,
exactly.
So Cortana's one of them.
Yep.
Multi-touch change computing. That was a new way to interact.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And and we'll get to the whole
the craziness.
Holo glasses.
Hey.
Let's see. I'm just going to skip around. What do you want to talk about next? I can just fire it up here. I've got let's take a break. This would be a good time to do that.
Okay.
I'll pose Joe Belfiore in a particularly compromising
flattering
part of his presentation, and we will continue. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, they are in Redmond. They've just come off an entire day hearing what Microsoft has to say about the new Windows 10, and you know, I don't know if they would say it, but I will say it. I think this is one of the biggest announcements Microsoft's made in years, and really exciting. It feels like a revitalized, re-energized Microsoft, and I think that's very, very good news for consumers, even if you're not a Windows user, because, well, competition makes a big difference. And you don't want it just to be Apple and Facebook and Google. You want some other people. Our show today brought to you by our friends at ZipRecruiter, a great solution for people who have to do some hiring. Anytime you have to do hiring, ZipRecruiter's there to help you. You realize it's much easier in these days of the internet to hire new employees. There's lots of job boards, but where do you post? Posting your job in one place probably isn't enough to find all the quality candidates who are out there. If you want to find the perfect hire, the ideal would be to post to all the jobs, top job sites with one click, and you can. This is such a cool idea. It's a meta job site. With ZipRecruiter.com, you post your job to more than 50 job sites, including Craigslist and, you know, the social sites, Craigslist and LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook, all with one click of the mouse. You'll find candidates in any city, any industry, all over the country. You post once, and you watch your qualified candidates roll in. And what's nice is you're not going to get the emails and the phone calls. ZipRecruiter does. And they help you organize the candidates, screen them, rate them, and hire the right person fast. I love that. No wonder ZipRecruiter is so popular with many of the biggest businesses in the country, over a quarter of a million businesses, including Twit. We use ZipRecruiter, and we're so happy with it. I want you to try it right now. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. And we've got a 4-day free trial for you. Believe it or not, 4 days, that's probably all you need. You will find that person fast. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Join these big companies, AT&T and Volkswagen and Marriott and Netflix and Target and Starbucks and Macy's and PayPal and Dell and all of these companies who use ZipRecruiter for hiring. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. They are in Redmond in an undisclosed location. Did they give you a nice room there?
Yep.
Yeah, a little conference room.
Yeah.
I have to note that big display on, and I guess it's on the left of this shot, says Microsoft. That's a perceptive pixel display, I would guess, yeah?
Yep.
And they showed it a little later on. They were drawing on it and stuff like that.
Yep.
They're going to sell this as the, what do they call it? The Surface Hub?
Surface Hub. But Surface Hub is more than just the perceptive pixel display. It is, yeah, it's a computer. So perceptive pixel displays up to this point have been displays. They haven't been computers.
84-inch displays, giant displays.
There's actually going to be two different sizes, 55 and 84-inch in this new Surface Hub. And what it is a conferencing system. It's a whole conferencing system. They built optimized versions of Skype for Business, which is Link. They have a new app called Connect. And what else do they have on there?
Connect, OneNote. C-O-N-N-E-C-T or K-I-N-E-C-T?
C-O-N-N-E-C-T.
Oh, come on.
Yep. it has two cameras. See how it looks like wings on the side there? There are cameras there, and there are speakers built in. There's multi-touch and multi-pen capabilities on that thing.
Wow.
We don't know pricing. We think availability is probably going to be around the time Windows 10 is available, so maybe towards the end of this year again. But it's a whole different thing. It's a complete system meant to make meetings better. It's not just a big screen. It's something more now.
I think it's kind of cool, but like anything cool, it probably costs a lot of money.
Well, you know, I talked to Jeff Hahn, who is the guy who owned Perceptive Pixel before Microsoft bought his company. And he said, you know what, it's not going to be super cheap, obviously, but we're definitely targeting to make it as so affordable that anybody could have one in their office. Not just Bill and Steve, anybody.
So that's $8,000, $7,000?
We have no idea. I mean, it's not going to be like for everyday consumers to have in home
yet. I'd love to have this in my conference room, though. Are you kidding?
Well, I bet at Twit you could afford to have one of these
in a
for
school,
sure.
Maybe. You wouldn't buy more than one in a school, but it would sure be great to have somewhere. And it's big.
It's big. The 84, and it's also 4K, a 4K display as well.
Watch TV on it?
No, Leo. No, it does computer stuff.
No, come on. I want to watch TV on it. Can I put, really, seriously, you can't?
I don't think you can. I don't know. They have built-in white
sucks. She could, I'm
what?
Sure.
That sucks. Well, it's got of a course. Browser. Does it have a browser?
I mean, yeah. Okay.
You watch Netflix on it.
No, it's a Windows 10 computer. So there are a couple of apps that have been fine-tuned for this environment.
I see.
I assume it comes with whatever's in Windows 10. I mean,
so somebody's saying for the 55 inch, it's about $8,500
right now.
Oh, I see.
Right. We don't know the price of this at all.
This is not the current Perceptive Pixel product they're selling.
No.
Does it have HDMI in?
We don't know, but it must. I mean, they said one cable, but I don't know if that meant power. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah.
It has Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and NFC and
I want it.
All kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Once
it's pretty cool. Yeah, I think it makes Perceptive Pixel usable and more interesting to a whole different category of people who probably just kind of wrote it off before.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting product.
Yeah, Jeff Hahn said he actually, in his office, has it set up like a drafting table.
Right.
So he has a giant screen, like a all glass screen drawing table, and he uses it with a pen, like to have his desktop, like instead of having a regular.
Isn't that how they use it on the Shepard Smith news show?
You mean isn't that how they used it on the deck of the Starship Enterprise?
Exactly. we were joking about getting loaners. I'm like, I couldn't even fit that in my apartment.
I know. I don't know what you'd do with it.
Load bearing wall.
But you know what? You could. You could fit an under 8-inch device on in your apartment, couldn't you?
I could.
That's true.
Yes, that's about what Joe is about to talk about right now. Windows 10 on the under 8-inch devices. Does that mean phones?
Yep.
Yeah, phones and very small tablets.
It doesn't include small tablets.
They didn't use the term Windows Mobile, which I think we're all disappointed. I believe they there's in the blog post, you know, it says Windows 10 for phones and tablets. In the show, they called it that. They also called it Windows 10 for phones and small tablets. Okay. And I think the point of this name is it's Windows 10. but it's a version or SKU or however
designed
they're going
to
do it.
A certain size screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's going to look a lot like Windows Phone does today.
He's holding up a 1520 right now, a nice red 1520. And showing, so this is the new Windows 10 interface for.
Yeah, and it looks like Windows Phone, right? I mean, yeah. One of the big differences is the back, you know, not a big difference, but the background image is actually on the background now for a change, which a lot of people wanted. And you can actually enable transparency still and see it through the tiles,
nice.
Which is kind of a cool feature from Phone. Yep.
They rearranged the scrolling apps list. Yeah.
And then he'll show you the settings in a moment, I believe, which is huge because, again, that has been broken in Windows Phone. Oh, first, I guess, the
This is the notifications.
Center.
Yeah.
Action right. Center. Works and looks exactly like the version in the desktop.
Yeah. New, little bit new color scheme, but not much change there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but it's consistent now with the desktop version, right?
Oh, the desktop. In fact, you can add tiles. Yeah. Nice.
Yep. Bunches.
That's nice. I like that. I also want to give you a quick look at the settings. Say, you know, the more I use kind of the junked up Samsung phones and stuff, the more I appreciate the cleanliness.
Yeah.
And the kind of, I don't know, the unity around Windows Phone. It's just it looks like it's not a camel. It was designed by a person, you know, not a committee. so he's showing the keyboard now, and they still have the flow or the whatever they call it.
Word flow. Yeah, and you'll appreciate this bit coming up because on a larger device of this type, like a very small tablet or a very large phone, like phablet. Actually, they use the term phablet explicitly as well.
Yeah. Really.
You can enable a one-handed mode for that WordFlow keyboard, which I think he's about to show. Because, you know, it's impossible to type on that thing one-handed unless you're...
No, but I kind of like it for two
Yeti
hands.
Or something.
I mean, it's like an old BlackBerry. I use the thumbs and I hold it, you know, side by side. Oh, look. Oh, cool. So he shrunk it down like a window.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the thing we learned today, which I had a leak on before, is the preview for this isn't coming out till sometime in February. So this is the mobile SKU, even though, like Paul said, they didn't call it mobile. But the version for the first technical preview for the phones and the small tablets will be sometime in February.
Can you, in the Action Center, can you in-line respond to texts, things like that? In the new
Yes. Now you can. So that's kind of an IMS feature. In fact, he's doing it right.
Yeah.
That's new. That wasn't there.
Love
before.
That.
For some reason, during this demo, what they were focusing on was the keyboard. And I'm like, the big news is up there at the top.
Right.
Yeah.
That kind of, because, you know, it's, and for the same reason it's good on iPhones, you know, you're doing something and someone texts you. Right. You want to respond. And
without leaving
right now,
what
it
you're
causes
doing.
You to leave
right.
the thing you're doing. And with this system, you can do it on top of there and then get back to what you're doing.
Nice.
I think that's a big deal.
Do we think Windows Phone 10, or whatever they call it, will come out at the same time as Windows 10 desktop?
I would think it would have to,
I believe so, yeah.
So this is all due in the fall?
We think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're in the Windows Insider program, you'll get it in the spring, you think?
Yep.
Yeah. They're showing texting, and this is just kind of a tour of the new features.
Yeah,
I want to say for Windows Phone, but it isn't Windows Phone. It's under 8-inch devices.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know too much about this kind of thing, but I believe on iOS they have a feature now where you can move text messages between different networks and, you know, probably go from iMessage to MMS, SMS, et cetera. They're adding that to Windows Phone. I mean, people who have been using Windows Phone day one will tell you that actually is how it used to work back in Windows Phone 7. When they had Messenger on there instead of Skype. But now they're going to support IP-based messaging and IP-based calling, too. So I guess phone calls and text messages, you'll be able to move between the network types, and it will do it automatically and pick the best one based on what your guy.
I kind of got the impression this was part of Microsoft's attempt to get everybody to use Skype for messaging, period. Like...
Even when they stopped that integrated approach in Messenger, because it supported some other things, too. I can't remember what else you could do in there. But, that was clearly the feeling. They were moving towards Skype as the preferred messenger client.
Yeah. And this, too. I mean, you one of the reasons you can move messages around is so that you can do what they would like you to do, which is to move it to Skype.
Right.
And it felt like Skype was kind of first among equals.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
That's fair.
Which I don't mind. I don't mind. Yeah. That's fine. Skype does a good job. Yeah. Windows 10 will have a version tuned for touch devices under 8 inches, the only phone designed to go with your Windows 10 PC.
By the way, that was one of the things Satya Nadella said at the end, and really wanted to emphasize that despite the fact that it's, we're now a devices and services company and we're cross-platform, and you said this before, the best experience.
By the way, they never explained this, and this is the thing I've been saying, which was devices and services is fine. Going where your customers are is fine.
Right.
It's obvious. It's pragmatic. It's logical. But you got to have some kind of a system where it's Windows best.
And that's what he says, right?
He finally said it, which is what I've been basically asking for.
So really, so it wasn't, so because I sounded familiar, that was you.
Yeah. Yep.
I thought.
Well, I said in 2014, yep.
The best experience has to be.
Our first one is mobile, whatever the heck it is.
The best experience has to be in Windows 10, and that's what he
Windows,
said.
For 2015, we need to add Windows best to the end of that. And he said that.
He literally said that.
Yep.
That's great. You must be very happy, Paul.
I'm always very happy, Leo. You know that.
Yeah, and so he says right there, integrated messaging and calling across the largest global network of users, MO, I don't know what that is, and Skype.
Mobile operator.
Oh, mobile operator. That's SMS and Skype. So you see, it's mobile operator and Skype, two together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, of course, universal apps, which I thought
that's
was
like saying, you know, between the Mac and the PC, that's 100% of all PCs.
Right. Almost. Almost. You know, a few people have Linux. A few.
Similar edition.
Yeah. Okay, next, moving along, universal apps. A universal app store, which I thought was interesting. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's the common store across Windows 10, Windows Phone 10, and Xbox. That's basically what he's saying. And so the new way of talking about apps that we used to call Metro Style or Windows Store, they're calling them universal apps. That's pretty much the new way of calling it.
Oh. That's a little confusing because... you're also talking about the fact that apps can be written to be universal.
Right.
So, but they're not guaranteed just because they're in the universal store to be universal apps, are they?
True. Right. And the developers can optionally choose which platform or platforms they support. They don't have to do all of them or whatever.
Right.
But I think the point of the universal app thing is that most of the built-in apps in Windows now will be universal apps. And so the People app or the Photos app or the whatever app that you get.
Calendar.
On a phone is actually the same app that you get on a tablet or a desktop PC or whatever.
I get it.
One of the
so here he's showing, for instance, PowerPoint on a Nokia 1520.
Yeah,
and it's essentially the same, but it's sized for that screen.
Yep.
Yeah, and so this is roughly analogous. Not roughly. It's fairly analogous to the Office for iPad. I'm sorry, Office for iPhone apps, right?
Right.
Although I'll have to go and look, but as he was going through this demo, I thought there's a lot more stuff in there in the ribbon, as they're calling it, than I remember seeing on the iPhone. And I don't have it, didn't have it with me at the time, but I think it's very possible and probable that this is an example of that Windows best thing where these things will, in fact, be better.
Right.
And we guess that would be the case, right? I mean, you want to give the Windows users some incentive to be on Windows. If the apps are exactly the same, Office for right?
I do.
No, I think you do.
Until today, they never explicitly said anything about this.
Well, it's not the case. The only touch version of Office is on iPad. It's not even available on Windows.
Right. Well, there's an Office mobile thing, but
it's not the same.
I mean, so this is coming. It's coming.
Right. So an interesting thing about what you're seeing right now. So this is touch first Office. You know, the thing sometimes I had called Gemini when we talked about it on the show. It's a universal app, so it's going to be the same on tablets and PCs. We don't know when we're going to see the first preview, public preview of this, but one of my sources has said February, which would line up with what they're doing with Windows 10 on phones and small tablets.
Will it come with touch first Office?
Well, yeah, so... this is super interesting. It is. So if you have a Windows device, you're going to get Touch First Office built in for free.
Wow.
There you go.
It's best on Windows 10. That's a way of saying that.
Smaller tablets and phones, Paul, or also all. I can't remember which way that goes.
It's the mobile SKU.
Okay.
Under 8 inches.
Right. And over 8 inches, you're going to probably subscribe like you do for a touch first Office.
To get full functionality. I would be shocked if these apps weren't in the store for everyone else for free with perhaps that same limited, semi-limited functionality that you see on iPad, Android, and iOS.
So here he's showing Outlook on the phone.
Yep.
So when I go to... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, it's okay.
When I go to the Universal Store,
I presume each app will have icons under it showing which things it'll run on, so I know what I'm getting.
We actually see a little bit of that today in the store, right?
Yeah.
There are apps that they don't really call them universal apps right now, I guess, but they, you know, they're also available on Windows Phone, and often if you paid for it, the license gives you the phone version for free if you paid for it.
That was my question. So I'll buy it once. And it will run on all Windows 10 devices, compatible Windows 10 devices.
I believe that's a requirement if you're going to offer. Maybe it isn't, but I would think that that is a requirement if you're going to charge for a universal app. It's a universal app, and you get it across the platforms. But I'm not sure about that.
I think it's up to the developer actually. If you want to charge people multiple times, or you don't.
Sometimes I talk and it sounds untrue as I say it.
It's good when we're across the table because we can look at each other like, what?
What? No, you're crazy. You're insane.
How dare you?
Oh, yeah. We saw Spartan briefly.
The new browser.
The new browser. Yep. We didn't learn a whole lot about it. They said, hey, we have this new browser, Project Spartan. It's coming sometime to the tech previews for the desktop and for phone and tablets.
Not going to be in this next drop, is that right?
I didn't believe it is.
I didn't look at it on the machines, but
I think he said like in the coming months. I don't think it's going to be in the first drop.
He just showed some swipe features on Mail that are direct copies.
Oh, yes, they are.
From iOS.
Yes, they are.
But that's okay because it works.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I think there's some universal mobile UIs that we just need to sort of accept they're going to be everywhere.
I think so. You know? And obviously nobody...
You know, the pull down on a list to refresh kind of stuff. I think it just needs to be everywhere.
No, exactly. That makes it easier.
As soon as they announce that, I think half the room lit up with, exactly.
Yeah, we've seen that before somewhere. Well, you know who else is doing it? It's Google's doing it with Inbox. Let's see. Moving on. Let's go to Xbox. What do you say?
Okay.
Mary Jo, before we do that, Universal Calendar, apps. So he's showing on the left a desktop and on the right a phone.
Oh, we didn't ask about Gmail support.
No, we didn't.
Darn it. You know, Gmail is supported now, though. Wait a minute, on my Windows phone.
Not on Windows. And so actually, you would think unified platform, they would support it. I would hope and assume that that's...
Because it's on my Windows phone. I'm looking at it.
We didn't ask. We forgot that one.
What is this collection?
It's the Photos app. So this is going to be cool because the Photos app in Windows 8.1 is broken, to be kind, and is horrible. The point here really isn't so much just that they're updating this one app. These apps are all being updated. They're being made into universal apps, so they're going to work across the different devices. They have a kind of a Spartan new UI, if you will, meaning less Chrome and
stuff. That's good, though. That's fine. That's Photos.
And they work on desktop computers and all that. So Xbox, the important part of today,
the most important announcement. But Mary Jo, Xbox is not a gaming machine anymore. It is the hub for your entire home experience.
That's a good way to put it, Leo.
Isn't it?
we didn't learn too much about Xbox One per se. Although there's a kind of a confusing array of Xbox apps in Windows 8.1 today. So the Xbox Games app, which has not been updated since 8.0, and still has that old kind of panorama UI. It's going to be replaced by just an Xbox app. And it's going to have all the activity feed, friending and all that kind of stuff you would expect from Xbox. Look at your achievements, compare achievements, start games, et cetera. It's nice looking. It's all that kind of stuff. I think the cool bit there, though, is there's a couple of things. But one of the big ones is you're going to be able to stream games from an Xbox One on a local network to a Windows tablet or computer. And what that means is you can plug in an Xbox One controller and go continue playing a game on a different machine, essentially, even though your Xbox is really running it in the background.
So happy.
Yeah. So you don't have to be, if you're taking up the big screen in the den and the other people want to watch TV, you can let the, just leave it there and let them watch TV and you can go play, not virtually, but, over the network. And that seemed to look good. I mean, we'll have to see how this looks in real life. And I asked them kind of logical follow-ups to this stuff because what about going in the reverse? What about playing PC games on an Xbox One? I mean, after all, there are a lot of PC games that are not on Xbox One and never will be. They might need to do that, and they're absolutely looking into that. And then I said, well, what about Xbox 360? I mean, this would be a way to achieve the compatibility problems in Xbox One. You can get the 360 games going, too. And he said, we're looking at that, too. So, no promises, but that stuff is possibly coming. And then there's DirectX 12, which is just the latest version of DirectX. Seems to be like a 50% power 50% less power consumption, which is a big deal for mobile devices, obviously. What else in Xbox? I feel like there's something else that I'm forgetting.
Why are you looking at me?
Right, why am I looking at
you? That whole segment, I just sat there and wrote my blog.
It's true, she did. It's true.
Okay, finally I can file.
Yep.
A break in the action.
Forgetting something on the Xbox side.
It's game DVR. So maybe it's any Windows 10 device I can play my Xbox games on streaming. And oh, that was one of the questions. It looked like it was on the homeland, but could you do that on the internet too, or no?
No, homeland.
Just the homeland.
Game DVR is kind of interesting, and so they're going to support on all Windows games the ability to record clips like you do on the Xbox One today,
right,
including the go back in time thing. Because
nice.
You're playing a game, something awesome happens, you want to record it, but it just happened. So if you're not recording, you don't get it.
Right.
But they'll go back in time 30 seconds, I think it was, or 60 seconds, and let you grab that clip as you do now on Xbox One. And it will work on non-Xbox games. If you have Steam and play some game on Steam, it'll work on those games as well.
That's a big category, the
Well, game recording, right, and those kind of networks where people watch people playing games and stuff, it's got a big business. Oh, and I forgot another part. I'm sorry, there's another part. So, actually, there is another part. The thing they're showing now is Fable. And Fable and Minecraft will be the first two games, not really, but the first two games for Xbox One anyway, that are cross-platform. And so you're going to be able to jump into a game where people are playing on Xbox Ones and you're on a PC and vice versa. You can have a mix.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
So right now, if you're playing, a game on the PC, you can't play and go over to the Xbox and play the same people. It's a different.
So this is going to be up to the game developer. And I would say that many types of games, like first-person shooters, where it doesn't make sense to have controller and then keyboard mouse mix, because keyboard mouse is so much more precise and it wouldn't be fair.
Right.
Probably not going to see this kind of thing. But you think about this kind of massive online type experience where it's action oriented, but it's the preciseness of it is not necessarily a big deal.
Fable is a Microsoft Studios game.
I think it is. Yeah, Fable, the Fable series. Yeah, Microsoft. Mary Jo's shrugging.
I'm just shrugging like
I don't want to do that. She says I don't want to do that. That's nothing I want to do.
I think it is.
All right, enough of gaming, no more. Let's talk about the thing that is going to transform computing as we know it.
I think we just talked about that. What do you mean?
Xbox One, no.
Oh.
Holographic
stuff. Yeah, that was a little bit.
Actually, what's
so how do you
want
to, how do we?
First of all, what's going on here? What is going on here?
So Mary Jo and I both actually got to use this thing.
We did.
Right? Oh, yep. This is the Surface Hub.
I will say that
the HoloLens, you got to put on the HoloLens.
Yeah, prototype
so
version.
Jealous.
The demo they did, in the show, when you kind of watch it from afar, it's not really clear what the heck you're looking at, and it's not really, you don't really understand how real it is and how awesome it is. I don't know that any time in the next year or two this is going to become a big part of my life per se, but for reasons both educational, academic, gaming, scientific, business, whatever. There are actually some awesome implications to this thing. This is a much bigger deal than, say, Kinect. And using it, I have to say, it was really impressive. It's hard to explain because, again, they wouldn't let us take pictures, videos, or anything.
Yeah, we were going down to see this thing. So you got to imagine this. So you have to go up to a locker, take everything off, your PCs, your phones, your wallets, everything. They made you leave everything in a locker. Wow. Then they gave us a paper notebook and a pen. And they said, if you really want to take notes, you can. And then they bring us downstairs to
list all of your assets.
Yeah, they let us go downstairs, and underneath the room we were in Building 92, there's this whole display area that's all secret, and that's where they have the HoloLens demo showcase.
Wow.
Yes, so there were four demos, right?
Yeah.
One was the Minecraft thing, which is unbelievable. Well, they were all unbelievable. Minecraft, right? There was one where you walk on the surface of Mars and you see the rover and all that stuff. Crazy, excellent. I'm missing. What was the third one you did?
Skype.
Skype one, where someone helps you through Skype video to install a new light switch or whatever.
I installed the light switch. That was my biggest achievement of
today. Wow, that's pretty cool. So you were able to understand and use the controls with your hands and all that stuff. It was fairly intuitive.
Yeah, and it's seriously, I think the hardest thing to convey here is how amazing this effect is, right? Because, for example, the Minecraft one, which is goofy. So you're looking at a room, and the room has some tables in it and a shelf and some chairs and stuff. And it scans the room, and you get all that kind of pixelation effects from Minecraft, you know. And then there's a Minecraft castle with little sheep outside of it on the table. And as you're looking down at it, they can cut out parts of the table through the hologram, and you can see through it to the floor and the stuff that's underneath. And it's all very, you know, you're moving around it, and it's all there, and it looks real. And then on the shelf, there's another little castle, and there's some zombies, and you make holes in the shelf so the zombies can't get to the castle, and you blow them up with TNT. And at one point, you blow a hole in the wall, and little Minecraft bats fly out of it, like in a 3D movie, because they're actually in space, you know, flying toward
you. They're coming towards you.
Yeah. And as you're looking through the hole in the wall, you can see all the depth of the crags and the pieces and there's lava. And as you move left, right, up, down, whatever, it's like it's really there. It really is incredible. And there's the Mars thing,
They're using this at JPL for the scientists to actually program the rover Curiosity to say you go here. And this is mind-boggling. This is the kind of it's eye candy. But it sounds like it's, ready.
You know, I got to say, when I saw it demoed in the keynote, I said to Paul, you know what, it's for geeks, and everybody's geeking out on it. But once I got to try it, and I was thinking of the applied situations, especially, say you're apartment hunting, and you could put these these goggles on. Whoops, faux pas. These goggles on, and you could feel like you were walking through rooms in an apartment if you're in Seattle and the apartment's in New York.
I was thinking, the Mars thing is awesome, and it's very specific, right? So JPL, right. NASA are going to use this thing. That's nice. And that's about the end of the customer base. But, you know, some people are never going to make it to Paris, or they're never going to go to the Amazon, or they're never going to do whatever it is. And this thing provides a way. You know how awesome just like Google Street View can be? I mean, this is you can actually walk through this virtual environment, and it's there, it's real, and it's holodeck stuff. I mean, it's
so I got a lot of questions for you because you've used it.
Okay,
it's amazing.
So first of all, for those who haven't seen the videos yet, it's basically they look like sunglasses. This is what we call augmented reality. It's not virtual reality. You know, the Oculus Rift, you can't see. Somebody could sneak up and hit you on the head.
Oh, through them. So you're seeing the room.
You're seeing the room.
Applied over it, projected over it.
And is the room dark? I mean, it looks like sunglasses. What?
No.
Optically, it's not. Okay. I'm just saying optically, you can see pretty clearly.
The Mars thing, seriously, you're standing in the middle of a room. It's lit normally.
Yeah.
And then they turn on the Mars view, and the room disappears, and you're standing on Mars.
Mars.
And you look up and down and around, and it's the ground is finely detailed, the rocks, and it's...
Was there a battery pack? Was it connected to anything, or was it just a set of visors?
So the prototype has a battery pack and like a little backpack type thing because it's a prototype. The actual device is cordless. The battery's built in. It's designed to work freestanding.
For how many hours?
2 minutes. No, I don't.
We don't know. We don't know yet.
Yeah,
I mean, Google Glass, that's one of the issues. When something gets this small and you're wearing it on your head, you can't put a huge battery in it.
Right. And so the way you navigate is you look, right? So if you want to put your cursor somewhere, you look. And that's why they kept talking about a gaze interface today. You heard them say that in the keynote.
Right.
So if you want to put your cursor somewhere, you just look at it. And then you can do this motion, which is called what again?
It's the kid from The Shining. No, it's called
Redrum. Redrum.
It's called an air.
A what?
Air tap. So you do that, and then you're suddenly interacting with where your cursor is. And on that Mars demo we saw, this is going to sound dumb, but I thought the coolest thing was you could use a mouse to interact also.
Oh, that was actually amazing.
Wasn't that cool? So you're you're on the surface of Mars, and suddenly you just take a mouse in your hand, you're standing at a desk, and you move the mouse, and...
hold on. So first of all, you're looking at a computer screen that's really in the computer's really there. The mouse is really there.
Right.
So you're moving the mouse cursor around on the screen, and you know exactly how it works all the time. But when you move it off past the edge of the screen. It goes out into Mars, and then you can click on stuff out on Mars.
I know.
And it's insane. I mean, it really, it's amazing.
So I'm thinking about this as when I saw the demo in the keynote, I was like, yeah, okay, it's for gaming, right? And then when I saw these other scenarios, whatever, gaming, your gaming helmet here. But then when I saw you could use it for things like, hey, what if you wanted to learn how to repair something or somebody wanted to show you a demo? There were just all these scenarios that went through my head, and I'm like, okay, this to me is way more interesting than I thought it was. And it also didn't feel, I mean, it was totally dorky because it was a prototype. We had these things on our head and all that, right? But it'll be interesting to see how this iterates, right? Right now, they're going to be these big glasses, but over time, maybe it's going to get smaller and it's going to get more.
So, yes, but the other thing is, like, it almost doesn't matter, though. It's not particularly big and bulky, the real one.
Yeah.
The point of this in many ways is you're going to do something, you know, and so if you're at NASA, you know, I'm going to put the glasses on and program the rover to go someplace else. It's no big deal putting on a pair of glasses. I mean, compared to how they do it today, this is incredibly sophisticated.
One interesting little anecdote I heard when I was walking around today was this thing was what was known as Project B. That was the code name. And up until 6 months ago, this thing was supposed to be a gaming helmet. That is what how it was.
Was this Fortaleza? Wasn't that what they called it?
I don't know if they took any technologies from Fortaleza and put it into this. But when Satya Nadella saw this demoed 6 months ago, he said, guys, you're limiting yourselves. Yeah. Why is this just for gaming? Make it for everything. And then they expanded it to be something much more than just a gaming helmet.
That makes sense.
We didn't get to do this ourselves because it wouldn't have made sense. But there's also kind of a maker element to this where you can construct 3D objects in space using a special holo set or what, I don't remember the name of it.
Holo Studio.
You know, it has all the kind of goofy, you know, real world, fake world interaction stuff. But you can then send it off to a 3D printer and create objects. Yeah. And they had all these toys in the room. Show Mary Jo. So Mary Jo, wait, no, back here. Yeah. It's a USB key holder. You know, so it's a USB key they glued into it. But it's a little koala bear. Very detailed, very cute.
Yeah.
Space, like a koala bear astronaut or something. And it was 3D printed, but this thing was made with Holo Studio.
It's super cute. Yeah. So
they made
so many things.
Trucks, an X-Wing from Star Wars.
Yeah,
it was really, really impressive.
So how much and when?
This year, I think, with Windows 10.
Really?
Yep.
At least, I wonder if that'll be in preview or, I'm guessing preview when Windows, because they said around the time of Windows 10.
Yeah. Okay.
If this is $1,000, I would buy it. I don't.
Price, but, we don't know.
But
I mean, games and virtual environments, I think, will be alone will be enough for a lot of people. I mean, like we both talked about, you know, those virtual city tour type things or apartment tours is excellent. And that stuff alone is going to sell it. You know, and to use your apartment thing, I mean, this is the type of thing that realtors would buy. There might be like a realtor thing where they just go around and film the place where they have all the information, and then you can just go to the realtor and run different programs for different places and say, yeah, I want to look at this one and this one, and then go out and actually, you know, see it.
You know, although I find it so interesting.
It's the same thing.
I mean, Facebook spent billions of dollars to acquire Oculus Rift. Google's been pushing Google Glass for more than almost 2 years now.
Yep.
And I have been saying for a long time, VR is not the solution because you can't see where you're going.
Right.
You want augmented reality. We saw Jerry Ellsworth, who's a friend of the family, and who made these Cast AR glasses that let you game. It's amazing to me that nobody thought of this, and Microsoft's been working on it. And without any fanfare, this is almost ready to ship. I mean, this is not. Yes, this is Microsoft research.
They said they've been building it for more than 5 years.
You know, when you think about there's a couple of technology shifts that Microsoft kind of got in on the back end of, you know, multi-touch and
quite a few
kind of stuff. This is an area where they hope to lead the group.
I think the thing to kind of watch is what happened to Kinect going to happen to this? In other words, when Kinect first came out, everybody was like, Kinect, everyone wants this and everyone's going to develop for it. And then not many people did. And now they're unbundling Kinect from Xbox so that it's more price appealing. You know, the question is, can Microsoft take the lessons they learn with Kinect and make this more interesting to developers and priced right for consumers, right? I mean, in fact, Alex Kipman, who was the guy demoing this on stage, he is the guy who also developed Kinect.
Yeah. Well, isn't there some Kinect technology in here?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure this is very related. I had the same – I still have the same concern. That I think that's valid. When you watch a demo during the keynote, there's a very Kinect-ish kind of vibe to it, and that it's very natural to think that. Although, you know, in using it, it's pretty good. You know, it works.
That's what excites me is that you guys have tried it and confirm that it lives up. I'll give you an example. Somebody in the chat room mentioned this. You would never wear Oculus Rift glasses to drive.
Right.
But you might wear these to drive. Absolutely. Imagine what that heads-up display could add.
Instead of the crappy commute that you have, you could have like the rolling hills of Germany or something on the side of the on the road. It's like not the industrial city I happen to be driving through.
I really – actually, we're going to play – let me take a break. We'll pause for a commercial, and I want to play this promotional video that they made, which I thought was quite good. Apple quality. Okay. They even have a guy in a white room.
But they had like an Englishman,
but he's not English. But let's take a little break. This is so fascinating. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Theriot. They are in Redmond, where they have just been briefed by Microsoft following a day of public video, which we watched, a half day of public video, which we watched and broadcast. In fact, it's a Twit Live special. If you want to watch Mike Elgin and Megan Maroney comment on the first half of the. Of the keynote, which was fascinating. And that's what we're working our way through, showing you little clips and pieces here. But you got more information in the briefings and more is coming out. And you got to try some of this stuff. And I'm just going to, the more I talk to you, the more I have to say, I do feel like this is a big day for Microsoft. They should feel pretty darn good about what they've announced today. It's huge. It feels like a revitalized Microsoft.
Yep.
It really does. We'll talk more in just a bit, but first, a word from HipChat Plus. We use HipChat Plus here in the studio. We love it. It is a great way. It's hard for me to figure out how to characterize HipChat. It looks like Instant Messenger, but it's so much more than Instant Messenger. It's how your team should communicate. It's how our team has started communicating, and we love it. We first started using it with our web development team. It's great. I keep it running at all times on all my platforms. And by the way, HipChat Plus runs on almost everything. There's even a web interface. So there isn't a Windows Phone app, but you could run it in the Windows on the browser interface, and it works great. And it's more than just IM. I mean, it's a way that it supplants email. It has video chat. It has document sharing. It has screen sharing. You can push system updates. You can share code. All in one platform. Everything that's on there gets saved, so you can. It's a record of what the work done and of conversations held. So it's as good as email in that respect. Plus, it integrates your developer tools, so GitHub and Jira and Zendesk all go right in there. 57 different services that HipChat plays nice with. HipChat brings your entire project and team communication together. It is really great, and yes. I see they have this animated GIFs, Instagram feeds, and Twitter notifications. Okay, all right. A little bit of fun. It's nice because it's SSL encrypted, 256-bit. All of your communications are private and secure. In fact, you even control when you form a group chat, for instance, what people can see. So you can invite a client into your group chat without him seeing your internal chat. I want you to try it. It's free right now at hipchat.com/windowsweekly. This is HipChat Plus. By the way, there is a freemium version, which is great. And you can use that for free forever. But for the next 30 days, you're going to get the full HipChat Plus when you go to hipchat.com/windowsweekly and click that Start Chatting button. Hipchat.com/windowsweekly. 30 days, all the features absolutely free, so you can really get a tour of it. And actually, for the first 100 people who sign up, we're going to get you 90 days. Find out why some of the biggest companies, why we're using it. Once we started doing it with the web developers, we started doing it in engineering, sales. We're going to do it. I'm going to set up a HipChat with our hosts and producers. Bring your team to life. HipChat.com/windowsweekly. I think you're going to enjoy it. Paul Theriot, Mary Jo Foley, they are in Redmond. And are you still in building, what is it, 92?
No, we're now in Studio C next to Building 92.
Leo, do you know what's in Studio C?
No, what's in Studio C?
Xbox.
Mary Jo, are you having like a little allergic reaction or something?
There's a giant Xbox.
I tried to get her. She doesn't even know what it is. You can't even tell. You don't. Like, you have no idea what it is.
There were creatures and stuff.
It's, you know, it's Master Chief,
Halo,
probably.
Yeah, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And he wanted to take my picture in front of it, but I said no.
You could be in Halo, man.
I know.
All right, let's see. This is a little promotional video that they put together for the HoloLens. If you didn't get to see it, I think it's pretty well done, and it kind of highlights how they worked on it. This is from Microsoft Research, and so I think they've done a nice job of taking a product from, you know, completely blue sky to something they're going to be able to ship this year. It's kind of mind-boggling. Let me get that. I got to jump to that promo here. Here we go.
The ability to draw with your hand or to take an asset, you know, an image and move it or scale it is a very natural way of interacting with it.
Here's what you can do with holographic video. Here's what you can do with using your world as a game level. Here's what you can do with taking the power of 3D modeling and creation. And guess what? Pointed out of a screen into real 3D.
You know,
and then sharing.
We can't get our 12-year-old to stop playing Minecraft as it is.
I know.
He's never coming to dinner.
Science fiction.
And I probably join him in there.
Science fact.
By the way, if your living room looked like Minecraft, maybe he would come to dinner.
I love the Minecraft stuff because it kind of makes sense now that Microsoft bought Minecraft. This is a perfect application for Minecraft.
With third parties to build applications for the device.
The Minecraft thing was amazing. It really was.
Because Minecraft, which normally is a little hard to build stuff, when you've got and it's kind of dopey because you just click. It looks so much more fun to do.
In other words, in Minecraft, maybe you build like a castle or some structure or whatever it is.
Right.
Instead of building it in some empty plane, you build it in the room. And you can walk around it in 3D space.
So cool.
It's amazing. It's really seamless. And seriously, I was ready to dump all over this thing. I mean, I
dumped on it. Today, I'm watching it. I'm saying, this is the requisite eye candy that they're never going to release.
Right, right.
This is what will get all the press. But they said at the beginning, you know, this is a new UI. This is a new way to interact with your computer.
Yep.
And I think that's really what it is, frankly. And it's fascinating.
And this also is running Windows 10.
Yeah.
Like probably the IoT SKU or some custom Windows 10 SKU, but it's part of the whole package too.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
And of course, there's, you know, they did the demo in the room and it was kind of cool how they did this because I guess they had a second camera wearing the lenses. I don't understand quite how they do that, but
well, they can transmit the video that you're seeing through the lens to a computer.
Is it stereo? Is it like 3D?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Uh-huh. Yep.
And did you get seasick at all? Like
No.
I was worried about that because I had seen people with Oculus Rift getting like.
And Oculus Rift is weird like that. Yeah, there is a if you're not used to 3D shooters in particular, you just even on a screen, some people get queasy watching that stuff. It is nothing like that. Although we didn't play a racing game or a shooter type game, maybe that would have made us queasy. I don't know.
I have to say, but it is not holographic computing.
Can we augmented reality.
Can we stop calling it that?
No, they really want to call it that.
That's really...
I don't know. Yeah.
Is it because of the holodeck in Star Trek?
I think so. Well, because, by the way, the logical conclusion of this is the holodeck in Star Trek. And by the way, that's not that far away.
I know.
This is pretty damn close. I mean, I think the one... I mean, obviously, these things aren't really there, right? So, I mean, there's some kind of tactile thing that would, you know, so that you could physically interact with stuff in 3D. But the effect is astonishing. And by the way, is much better than... Oh, there's the table. I mean, it literally looks that good. It literally looks like there are Minecraft Lego type things on the table. The stuff is there.
I feel like we're seeing what we're all going to be doing in a few years. Like, this is like the first glimpse of the mouse or windowing interfaces. Mm-hmm. This is what computing is going to be like in a few years.
Sure.
Is that crazy?
No, I you know, like, well, like Mary Jo said, this is a question. I mean, we'll see if it takes off with developers and all that kind of stuff.
It'd be crazy not to develop for this.
Well, look at Kinect for Windows, right? Like, that is something I thought would take off a lot more than it did, too.
Yeah, but that didn't change. You know, that's like, that's Minority Report going woo, woo, woo.
No, because there were some business applications, like health applications and things like that, that people have built that are pretty interesting. But it just so far is very early days.
Kinect. This is Kinect done the next generation of Kinect, which is you're still doing the same Kinect stuff.
Well,
but the display is in your world.
So to be fair, there is one big difference between this and Kinect technologically. In fact, when they first started talking about it, I started looking up around the room, and I was thinking, there are going to be little projectors all over this room making this happen, and we're all going to see it there, and that's going to be crazy.
We saw that demo, right? What was it called?
Then you put on glasses, and you realize, okay, this is a different thing. So in other words, Kinect is a camera or set of cameras sitting on a wall somewhere scanning you in 3D space. And so it only has certain capabilities because of the way it works. I mean, this thing, you bring it with you around the room. You're looking through it. And, you know, what you see is reflected in, you know,
as
you move.
If you show any 12-year-old in the entire world this image of a guy in Minecraft, in Minecraft.
So, by the way, here's the kicker. It is way better than that image portrays. Because what's not portrayed in that image is the holes that can exist in the surfaces where you can look into the hole and see what's on the floor underneath it. And it's insane. And that stuff is what really, I mean, and you can sort of see above the fireplace there's a hole in the wall, but what you're not really getting from that image is the depth of it.
You can look into it.
Yeah, you can look into it, and it's there.
There's another room on the other side.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Holy
bats could fly out of that hole.
Crap.
And they fly toward you in 3D.
What?
It's crazy. No,
I want it now, Mommy, now.
You know, another cool thing we learned is part of the reason this didn't leak was very few people, even at Microsoft, have seen this thing. They said we're like among the first maybe I think they said 2,000 people ever who've seen it.
Wow.
So that's why it didn't leak, if you're wondering why nobody had a really good leak
on
it.
Man. Man, oh man! I
heard someone say to someone else here, you know, this didn't leak, and that's good. We got to do more of that kind of thing. And supposedly that, and someone said, well, but you know, Microsoft Band didn't leak, and I was like, I wrote about that one, but I heard nothing about this one.
Yeah, and this is mind-boggling, and I think the first big breakthrough. I mean, I've seen Leap Motion, Kinect. I've played with a lot of new UIs, and in every respect, they leave me cold. They don't get me excited.
I'll give you a great example. I love shooters, right? Obviously, Call of Duty, whatever. I played around with Oculus Rift, and it was a little queasy inducing, and I was like, yeah, whatever. And
me too. I paid for it on Kickstarter.
But this one, I was like, well, like, I mean, I'm not going to spend a lot of time walking around on the surface of Mars, per se. I'm sure that would get old. But it is stunningly beautiful. And the real-world practical implications of it are amazing.
Well, you guys have to you got a place to go. You got the Bellevue Brewing Company. A meetup is coming up. I want everybody to go to the Bellevue Brewing Company and buy Paul and Mary Jo a nice golden rock.
And as a little tease, if you're in Redmond right now, we may have some special guests. That's all we're going to say.
Yeah, some VIP-age.
When does that
start? That's all we can say.
It starts in half an hour?
6:30 till 9 or so.
All right. Before I let you go, though, at the end of all this, Satya Nadella comes out. And I was impressed. I thought he did a good job of explaining the kind of the context for Windows 10.
Look, he said the one thing I needed him to say, which was the thing we talked about earlier. You know, people have been confused about this mobile-first, cloud-first strategy and Windows. You know, he didn't say it quite this way, but, you know, Windows best. Yeah. And to me, that was like I wanted to stand up and clap. You know, like, yes, thank you. Because a lot of people have been questioning, rightfully so, what's the advantage of sticking with Windows if you're just going to make these things as good on these other platforms? I mean, at this point, we might as well just use an iPad or whatever.
Right.
And I think that's an important message to communicate, especially when you're talking about the next version of Windows.
Yeah. I think he did a great job of saying, kind of painting the picture of what his vision is. And putting the pieces together that we've seen but not really been able to put together because we didn't quite see how this meant, what this meant in context and so forth. I feel like the coming in this fall, Microsoft is going to have a very compelling story to tell. They're going to have a platform that a lot of, you know, he said some really things I wanted to hear. He said customer first, for instance. He said, we want you to love Windows. We don't want you to have to use it. Use it right. Because you have to use it, which is frankly, I think, more than half of the 1.5 billion people who use it because they have to use it. They didn't choose it.
That is the most hurtful thing I've ever heard you say.
They didn't choose it. They have to use it. Sure. But he wants to, but I think that's exactly right. He should, that's what they should aim for. Customer first, we want you to love it. We want you to feel like people who love Apple, we want you to feel that way about our product. Yeah. And I think they're very well positioned to do that. So I think he said the right thing.
Ultimately, that's what Windows 10 is. If you think about any customer type that it crosses, the point is to make those people happy.
Yep.
You know, there are people who really like Windows 8 and use it on tablets, and those people are going to be really happy. You know, Windows 7 users on traditional PCs could be really happy. Xbox One users, really happy. There's a lot of really good stuff going on there. So, yeah, this is a good release. This is different from some of the other things we've had to talk about over the past few years. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know me. I'm no cheerleader for Microsoft or Windows.
Yeah.
But I feel like, first of all, whether you use Windows or not, it's really important that there's only a handful of companies, in the world that are changing technology. That this is one of them. You don't want it to go the way of IBM and just go, yeah, well, we're just going to ride our patents into the sunset. You want them to be a vital, exciting company, innovating and challenging Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon. And I think this is a Microsoft that is newly revitalized. It makes me really support getting rid of Sinofsky, getting rid of Ballmer. right? You don't agree.
If HoloLens really was started 5 years ago, it was started under Ballmer.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Yeah, but you know what?
I don't think this was Ballmer's vision, I got to tell you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think that's true. Even if everything that happened today was somehow, something that started earlier under Steve Ballmer, there's a kind of a casual elegance to Satya Nadella that Steve Ballmer doesn't have. And he's a great guy and I love him, but I don't think he would have communicated this as effectively, nor do I think this strategy would have been this kind of fine-tuned. So, I mean, there's something good happening here.
Yeah.
All right.
There's definitely excitement. Even the Mac-toting press who came to this event.
Were there a lot of Mac? A lot of Apple?
It was all Macs and us. Yeah. Okay. But they even actually admitted they were kind of impressed and excited.
Yeah. You know what? I'm excited.
And then they went back to their trendy pants.
I'm sitting here with a 1520 and a Dell XPS 13 on the way. And I want those pieces of hardware to be as compelling and exciting and satisfying to use as the other stuff that I use. And it hasn't been that way for a while. And I think it could be that way again. And that by itself is great. And, it does kind of mean that you have to look at Windows 8 as a transitional thing, which you've always said. That was a transitional product.
Well, the problem is it transitioned people away from Windows.
But it was such a big abrupt change. It really did do that. Yeah. Now Windows 10 is kind of the polishing and the maturing, and I think everything now starts to make sense.
Yeah, it totally makes more sense now. The whole, you can run Windows everywhere. They've been talking about that for years, right? Run on any Windows. I mean, how many years have we heard that? But this is a year that actually starts to happen.
Right.
Of course, the question is always with Microsoft, can the corporate culture now go on to support this vision? Is Nadella enough of a leader to eliminate the factionalism that's been,
I've not caught whiff of any of that kind of thing in quite a while.
I think they got rid of
it. And that was always a huge problem. That whole Microsoft org chart with the guns pointing at each other.
Yeah.
Mary Jo, I don't know if you have any exception to that, but I can't think of anything like that.
Yeah, I think something that went a long way was unifying the Windows teams. That really helped a lot, bringing Windows Phone together in Windows, and that took away a lot of the tensions. They brought together the different office teams in ways they hadn't been brought together. Like, all the email teams sitting together and working together. So that takes away that.
The other thing that was interesting about today was, you know, just kind of milling around in the building we were in, guys from office, you know, Chris Capicella was there, guys obviously from phone, guys from Windows, but guys from all over the company, the Xbox guys were there. And, you know, everyone is so jazzed, you know, by what's happening. It's a very different kind of positive
That's neat.
Vibe and non-arrogant, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I want to hear, because the problem with all of these keynotes, it's true.
We're not used to good news, Leo.
I know.
Both of us are so confused.
I'm going, what's happening? We're both being positive.
I'm walking into people. I don't know what's going on.
It's really easy to come out of a keynote with this glow and the reality distortion feel and say, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be great. So the proof is in implementation. I think they're pointed in the right direction. I'm really encouraged by what you say about the feeling on the campus, because I think that's really Microsoft was its own worst enemy, frankly.
Yes, for sure.
And
hey, did we also mention the good news about new flagships, plural?
I heard that. Did they mean like high-end phones?
High-end Lumia phones. Well, they didn't say Lumia. They said, we're going to have more flagship Windows phones.
That was a big question mark.
Because the way that was, the context of that was with Windows 10.
Yeah, so that's okay.
Next fall.
Well, that's like 9 months away.
I actually was wondering if they were going to do any more flagships.
Right.
I think
we all were. Was it the end of the line? Was the 1520 the last?
Yeah.
So I was happy to hear that.
I agree.
I even said yay on my tweet.
Right.
It was fun watching you guys tweet during it. Thank you for doing that. That was part of our information stream. Very exciting day for Microsoft. And we're glad that we have two of the best Microsoft watchers on our team. Paul Thurrott from the brand. I got to give you some props on the brand new Thurrott site. Nice. THU. Somebody said, you keep saying two R's, two T's. There's three T's, you know.
Well, right. Trying to buy up some domains that were close to this so that if you misspelled it, you'd end up at the right place.
It looks really good. Your coverage is great.
Type in like throttle.com or throwup.com.
This is the new home for Paul Thurrott. It's his, and I love it, and I'm so happy for you, Paul.
Oh, Halo. You can see the Halo statue in there, Leo, right in the middle, under the green tile.
Mary Jo had no idea what that was.
Nope, I sure didn't.
I saw this at E3, I think, one year. Yeah, that's awesome. Studio C. Right out the door, there's those guys, Mary Jo. Go give them a kiss for me.
I will. I'll give them a hug on my way out.
It looks like somebody's been polishing this guy's head. Is that...
I think it's just...
Polish his head for good luck kind of thing? That's awesome. Paul, thanks and congratulations. Thurrott.com. As always, at Thurrott on Twitter. You've got a great event to go to. The Bellevue Brewery waiting for you and thousands of Windows Weekly fans. Mary Jo...
Well.
Hundreds.
We'll see.
Dozens.
It could be Mary Jo, I, and like 17 bloggers.
It's going to be a ton of you, and I know. Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That is her blog, a great place to catch up on this stuff. And, you know, she was ahead of you, Paul, because she could file during that whole Xbox segment. So she's eight stories.
I caught up later. She went to the Perceptive Pixel.
You got her. Good. Yeah. Really great job. Great information. We do Windows Weekly, and we'll be back to our regular time. Normally, Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. Please tune in then next Wednesday and every Wednesday to cover the latest in Windows. I think it was an exciting year last year. I think it's going to be a really exciting year this year. I'm really thrilled by this news. You can also, if you can't watch live, you can always get on-demand versions. All our shows are available on our website, twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/W for Windows Weekly, but you can also get it wherever finer podcasts are aggregated, including the Windows Phone. We have a great Windows Phone app. Dimitri Lialin has done a great job on that.
We might see Dimitri tonight, actually.
Say
right?
hi to Dimitri and thank him for me.
He's in Redmond now.
It's a beautiful app. I use it all the time to show how good a Twit app can look on Windows Phone. Also, iOS and Android, some great apps. Thanks. And we don't do those. Those are thanks to... independent developers who just out of the goodness of their heart and, their energy make something for us. We appreciate it. Paul, Mary Jo, have a wonderful evening at Bellevue Brewery. I wish I could be there with you. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.